Me, I'm in Florida this week. I'm not at home. I'm at my wife's in-laws, and the reason for that we'll get into at the end of the podcast. But just to say, I'm recording with the MacBook Pro studio quality microphones because I didn't pack my travel mic.
It's not just an elaborate scheme to test them out. You just forgot the
I mean,
travel
I've tested this microphone out before on accident when I was
mic.
connected to two monitors and the fan was kicking on and everything was
That was at
going.
watch time, right?
Yeah, it was my first episode with David Smith, and it was rough. I had to use a very expensive app to get the audio to be half decent.
Like, it sounded all right, but then the fans kicked in and it just overblew everything.
That's right. That's right. So this time I'm being very intentional. So a lot of times what you hear when you talk about the studio quality in air quotes, microphones on the MacBook Pros is that, if you do it intentionally where you try not to have your fan kick on and you have the, you're facing the computer, you're not moving around in different directions. And you're definitely not typing on the computer, then hopefully you can have a semi-decent experience. And so we're going to try to do that here.
It doesn't sound too bad.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
I've offloaded all of the web stuff to the iPad beside me, and so that should keep the fans down. Although we're still like recording our videos for the YouTube for the 9 to 5 for youtube.com/9to5Mac, where we now do these on video. And I had a note in our document, the future of Happy Hours TV. Next week I want to stream for the first time. So if you have been enjoying the video version of this podcast, or you don't know about that yet, people are still discovering it. I'm finding we're posting these weekly on 9to5Mac's YouTube channel with like actual video of us talking and our faces and everything. Hello. And next week, but we do it all kind of offline where we're on Skype or doing video on Skype, and we still record a local audio. The next week I want to try and go live, for the first time, and it'll be on Thursday. Usually it's around like 5 p.m. Eastern time. What time is that in London?
Right now it is 9 o'clock.
Okay, so about
9 p.m.
eight. So about 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock is London, because it's we're doing we're right now. Yeah. Anyway, all
We'll
that
give it a go.
logistics
We'll see
stuff.
what happens.
Yeah, so we'll do that. The
We're trying
future
to get our
of
ducks in order before WWDC stuff starts going like full.
yeah. Sure, yeah. And I figured it probably isn't, I wanted to do it today, but it's my fault. I figured that being on the road and not having my microphone wasn't the best time to wing it.
Yeah, we're already starting from -2.
Sure. Indeed, my fault. But the feature of Happy Hour will also be TV because the second end of this is there's just a lot of TV news this week that we'll get
Lots of
to.
TV news this week.
Yeah. Big variety of
But
stuff.
first,
First, let's talk about the Apple Store.
what's going on?
In the Apple Store, Michael Stieber is just incredible at covering retail and specifically Apple stores. And he's had tremendous coverage throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, where Apple stores have necessarily had to close, and there's different rules in places where they reopen. So as of this week, Michael Stieber has reported that over 100 US stores will be open, mostly with curbside or storefront service only. And so even though they're opening, there's not a whole lot of just go in and browse and be packed like the DMV. It's largely, flagging at the door. Like, what are you here for? Can this be done online? Can this be, will you require an appointment to come back? It's not the usual state of business for the Apple stores.
Yeah, to all intents and purposes, it's kind of like essential business only for
Sure.
however, you want to define going to the Apple store as essential business, but not just walk in and play around on the laptops for a bit. It's mostly like if you're here to get something done, you can do it, but that's what we're going to prioritize.
Yeah, I think in some places you literally could walk in and like if you wanted to try the Magic Keyboard for iPad for the first time, or like in my case, I've never tried the 12.9 inch version, so I would be curious to walk in and try that, but not curious enough to risk it.
Risk public safety.
Yeah, but I think you could do that right now in certain stores. But largely, I mean, if I were a customer and I needed to go to a store for some reason, I would call ahead or schedule an appointment online. I would do pickup and only if it was something I couldn't have shipped within a reasonable amount of time. Like if it's an Apple Store exclusive and, you know, for some reason you can't do it online. And then even with like the Genius Bar stuff or the Apple Care support stuff, it's they're doing curbside stuff there too. So
yeah, because they're kind of following like local laws, right? Like I don't know if you think they're kind of reopening too fast or something, because the Apple Store was like one of the first things to shut down, right? Heading into the pandemic, because they were like closing all stores in like the middle of March, right? They'd already done the China stores in the end of February, and then they followed up by basically closing all Apple retail stores in like mid-March, which was ahead of, you know, most like local administrations or governments like guidance of saying that we're going to do it. You know, instead of being forced to do it, they did it proactively.
Sure.
But I feel like they kind of lost some of that goodwill with how they've started reopening stuff, because I feel like they're almost just reopening stuff as soon as they're, you know, like legally allowed to now. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, definitely. Where I live in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, the city right next to us is Biloxi, and it's a casino city. And the Gaming Commission decided to close the casinos before the state required it. And so they were never obligated by any state order to close or reopen on a certain schedule or with any kind of procedures. It was all up to them. And that's kind of, I mean, Apple eventually, like, the local laws did apply to Apple stores because they were non-essential retail stores. But I, one thing early on in this process that kind of irked me was we knew why they were closing retail stores. We didn't know what the formula for reopening was. You know, and it's still not clear,
but that's partly just because the uncertainty of the landscape, right? Like no one really knows exactly how this is. Even now, there's still fears about, you know, second waves and redevelopments, and we're all just kind of skating along until there is, you know, like a permanent vaccine or, you know, proper remedies available, which could still be, you know, a year and a bit away at least. You see what I mean? So, I'm not knocking them. Like, obviously, they're taking, you know, employee safety seriously, and they're providing masks. If you go to a store, like any store, any Apple store, if you go, just walk up there and you don't have a mask on, they'll give you one to use, like in the store. And you know, they're requiring distancing and they're reducing hours and stuff. And Genius Bar stuff is limited down. But it is kind of weird that, like, you'd have thought if they were also the first to shut, they might have been some of the last to reopen. But that hasn't happened as much. I think it's hard to know exactly what they you know, at the end of the day, Apple is a business like anyone else, and they can't shut stores forever. So you have to, it's always a balancing act, right? And if they did shut sooner, then that also means that they've just been shut down more than other stores anyway. So there is a predominancy to reopen potentially in places. Like, I don't know. It's hard to, it was just kind of weird because going into it, it felt like they made like a huge statement by shutting down completely. Mm-hmm. And now coming out the other side, they're kind of charging ahead with reopening, at least on the retail front. Like from what we've heard on corporate, most people are still being told they, you know, to work from home instead. And there is even like manager optionality where they're like, you know, if you really have to come in, then you can come in. Or if you want to come in, you can come in. But, you know, it's no stress, no skin off your back. We're not going to like penalize you for staying at home and working from home when you're in, you know, the Apple Park infrastructure. But you know, do a 180 to Apple retail, and they're basically telling everyone to come back and do hours and stuff. So there's the contrast there of the imbalance.
Yeah. Two last things I'll say. One thing is from Steber's coverage that more than half of all stores are open worldwide. You know, there's a big asterisk with that, which is that they're open in this capacity that we're discussing right now. So if it was just that they were reopened wide open, you know, it's iPhone launch day, everybody camp out and line up and, you know, crowd in, that'd be totally different. But on the other hand, if I were an Apple Store employee like I was a decade ago, I wouldn't want to go back right now. Like I would feel, you know, not great about it, especially when there's so many opportunities for at home work for Apple that are effective, you know. Then I would probably prefer like you know, it's so tough because if you incentivize coming back, like you say, you know, you got to do extra pay, then that makes it kind of, you know, based on economic conditions, and like, you know, you're kind of like putting at risk people that rely on that more.
You're distorting incentives whichever way you do it, right?
Yeah, it's just no perfect way to do it. But yeah, you know, what I don't want to say is everyone go back to work. I don't care, because I do care, and I've, you know, I don't feel good. I do feel uneasy about it. You know, from a, you know, like Apple could totally, they could not have retail stores, and they could have all, I mean, most of the Apple corporate, or most Apple employees are retail employees. I think Apple could assign everyone an online role and be okay. I know that. So yeah. I definitely want to empathize with people who aren't ready to go back or feel, you know, they don't feel good about it. And so, definitely. And then on the topic of COVID-19, last week we discussed kind of at length the release of iOS 13.5 with the exposure notifications API for contact tracing apps from state authorities, regional authorities on health. And, you know, update from my coverage from a week ago where I had 3 yeses and, you know, 17 no's.
17 no's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the people that haven't responded yet but Virginia did flip from a no to a yes. So, yeah, so now I have four.
A slight improvement.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, we can see Switzerland has now actually launched. It's not nationwide yet, but they've launched to like the first test group, basically a app with the Apple Google exposure notification API implemented. So they're, you know, full steam ahead in doing that. I think they've released it to like the army and the small, you know, like test, like smaller scale group with the obviously view to release it wider. But that's like the first time we've actually seen a country do it, if you see what I mean, at proper scale.
Yeah, if we did that in the US, I would, at this rate, you know, if it was like, we have an app, we plan to do this, we're testing it with a limited group of people, I would feel a lot better than no response, or, you know, heck no, or, you know, what we have now is we've had the four yeses means that they plan to do this. So,
yeah, the UK situation isn't much better, really. Sure, they're still... Yeah. They're apparently going to start track and trace policies here from next week, but it's going to be manual because the app isn't ready and the app still isn't. They still haven't committed to doing the Apple Google approach. They're still doing the, you know, the privacy invasive one, and there was some clause in it that was like a big brouhaha in British press, I think today, where it said we're going to keep your information for 20 years. It's like so. There's a whole load of
how arbitrary,
and those kind of problems just don't exist in the Apple Google space because obviously the API doesn't require location or additional information, and Apple is, you know, manually reviewing the apps that can get the entitlement to do the API in the first place. So you kind of know, like, if you're using the Apple Google approach, you have some confidence in privacy and security just by the fact that Apple's going to scrutinize those apps very closely and the rest of the app stores, you know, as it was.
Yeah, I have a feeling people don't want to hear me talk more about this, but if you do, I was a guest on the awesome Icon Garden podcast on Friday night, and that was released over the weekend, I believe. So it was you can hear me discuss sort of the same thing we discussed on Happy Hour last week, but go, you know, a little bit more. Let's shift gears here. There's a new version of macOS Catalina out for the Mac. Catalina 10.15.5, bunch of ones and zeros and fives and periods. What I know about this is it has the new battery health management feature that will be good for you, and that for me as a more mobile person won't be something that I use. And also I think it came out like really late in the evening too, so it was like a weird
It was a bit of a random thing. Time.
Yeah, yeah. So I've updated it. I was on the beta version for whatever reason. And then now I'm on the release version. So
okay. What's at the like, you're plugged in obviously, right?
I am plugged in at 99%.
What battery percentage?
99% for today. Like, and this was coming from a non-100%.
Yeah, so basically it's going to go to full, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And the battery health management recap
in 28 minutes it'll be full. Yeah.
Maybe that's because we're recording there. Maybe.
It's because my display is bright and Skype is Skype.
Skype is Skype. That'll always use your battery. Yeah, so for the Mac, battery health management means it's going to look at... it's going to be smart, supposedly, and look at the way that you use your computer. And if it finds that your computer's plugged in for the majority of the day, it will stop the laptop from filling up to 100% every single time. It will stop around 80% to prolong the lifetime of the battery, because lithium-ion batteries... in perfect condition should be stored and left for long periods of time at around 80% capacity. They shouldn't be charged to full. So supposedly if you have, and this feature is turned on by default, so it should detect that for someone like me who basically you know, since I upgraded on Tuesday, and I've only ever used the laptop sitting on my desk plugged in full time, right? So I don't know how long I have to stand on the sidelines and wait for this thing to kick in, but I upgraded on Tuesday, or, you know, the moment it came out, and now it's like almost the end of Thursday, and still my battery is charging to 100% completely, and the behavior is unchanged. So I'm not sure when I'm supposed to expect this to kick in and be magical, but it has not happened to date.
Yeah.
I actively want my battery lifetime to be limited to 80%, because that's what makes sense to me most of the time when I'm using, you know, a laptop as desktop situation.
I would argue in your situation right now with keyboard, with your keys falling off, you know, as you breathe, that maybe don't worry about this battery that you have and
okay,
worry about the next one.
I'm thinking theoretically, right?
Sure, yeah? Sure. Like, yeah.
So, because I've said this on the podcast before as well, as well as my keyboard being in utter tatters, like literally last night I was sitting on the sofa with my laptop and I tilted it sideways and the keycap of I and O just fell off. Like it literally just fell off. So that's pretty bad. But then on the battery side, it's been telling me to service my battery for like the last like 3 months as well. So
okay,
my battery's already shot, but I'm thinking for the wider man, right? The wider sure. human out there.
Yeah.
Maybe if this battery health management feature had been implemented 3 years ago, right now my battery wouldn't need servicing and I could have got an extra few months out of it.
Yeah.
And The last time I brought this up, everyone messaged me and was like, If you get the keyboard replacement, on the Butterfly keyboard replacement program, they'll swap the battery out as well, right?
Sure.
I understand that, and I will at some point do that. But as this is my only machine where I actually do my work on, and I need to work Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursday, Friday, I haven't really found a place to do it at the moment.
Just drive into the Apple Store and do a curbside swap out.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's how it works. I actually don't know how it works, but I'm sure.
No, I don't know how the key. I don't know what they're doing with keyboard replacements, but I even in normal times, I was failing to find a window to actually get my computer switched out because I literally don't have a backup machine that's actually any good. So
right.
I've been coasting on this one for the time being, and literally coasting. The keys are now floating all over the place, so it is getting to the end of the tether. But I'm definitely not going to bother in the current environment, and I'm just kind of like resigned to just living with it, and then, you know, changing the computer at the end of the year when the next 16-inch update comes out, basically.
Sure. The big indicator for you, I think, will be a display change where it's, what is it, mini LED we're talking about?
Yeah. But yeah. At this point, I've kind of reached the lifetime of the laptop, sadly. Like,
okay.
I don't know if, I mean, it's kind of bad, right, that a 2016 laptop's, I feel like it's kind of reached the end of its tether under four years. Like, I do kind of work this thing pretty hard, so I don't know. I'd say I wish it. Well, my previous laptop was a 2012, and I replaced it in 2016. But when I replaced it, my 2012 wasn't on its last legs. If you know what I mean.
You could easily argue that you should have a desktop and not a laptop.
True. Yeah.
But,
you know, if you okay, I guess the battery situation, fair enough. Because even in normal times, right, I could pay the 150 quid or whatever to get the battery just swapped out if I really wanted to.
Right.
And just have the battery service. The keyboard's really what's standard the problem here, right?
That's
and,
right. Yeah.
And the Butterfly keyboard is well documented for its unreliability problems.
It's been fixed in new hardware that you need to buy, and if you were to have it replaced, it would just be resetting the clock. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and when my keyboard problems started happening really last year, I felt pretty bad. I didn't want to, like, psychologically, I don't know, I was sticking it to Apple because I was like, I'm not going to buy the 16-inch.
I remember.
On day one, just because they made a bad keyboard and that's what I'm currently using, right? That just feels like validating their mistake. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hang fire. But I am kind of getting penalized for it now on a daily basis. So that was my choice, but that's the situation. Also, this is only a 256 gig machine, which is now way too small for what I need. So when I do upgrade next time, I'll probably get a terabyte. So
you should. Terabyte's good.
I'll just wait till the end of the year and then change the laptop situation.
So for the sake of macOS Catalina 10.15.5, if you want to try this feature out on your Macintosh, if it's a laptop, desktops don't need batteries, they don't have batteries. But if you're using a laptop, you can go to the System Preferences app, and then you find it in the Energy Saver Preference pane, which I believe is a light bulb near the bottom.
And it should be enabled by default.
Okay. And from there, it's under Battery Health, which is the button that you click on.
Yeah, and then it gives you the explanation with the chat box.
Yeah, and so I'm there. I had it off in the beta cycle. It didn't, like, revert to on again, so that's positive. Okay. Battery condition on a brand new laptop is normal, and that's
I'd hope your battery condition is normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, just to state my position, I definitely use my laptop as a laptop where I want it to last the longest in between charges. And that when I'm connected to a charger, it tends to be because I want to get back to 100 and get off the charger. Yeah. So, what they say in this description is as your battery ages, peak capacity is reduced to extend battery lifespan. I want everything right now. Yeah, I want everything right now. Yeah, I don't want to compromise this.
We did talk about this when this feature was in beta, but it is kind of annoying that there isn't an easy opt-out one-time-only situation thing, right? Yeah. So you have to dive three levels of system preferences menus to turn it on or off.
Yeah.
When I'm in a situation where most of the time I am using laptop as desktop, but once a week or whatever, I'm sitting on the sofa and trying to type on it, and presuming my keys stay stuck down, I kind of want the battery just to fill to full in that position. So maybe in the next major version of macOS, so what they're going to tease in a month's time, if they just extended the battery menu bar item, if they just had an option for charge to full, this, and then that would essentially mean this one time only, go to 100%, but then next day just revert back to your normal behavior of the battery health management stuff.
Yeah. Remember the days where you could, batteries were swappable, and you could have the battery out and plug in to the wall, and you were powered by the wall, and the battery was like this whole thing over there.
Yeah.
Come a long way from then, and I'm not sure in which direction, but we have come a long way from there. And then also there's a few changes here as well. So this version of macOS has the same FaceTime change as what we saw last week with iOS, where you can decide to not have the heads, change position and size by who's speaking and just be still. You've also got, I know a lot of listeners of ours listen to the podcast with an Apple Pro Display XDR.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's the best display of the year.
Yeah, it's a great value too. it is a new change that's the calibration fine tuning for Pro Display XDR. Jeff Benjamin, our video editor, has a great write up on what that does, and hands on. What they're releasing say is
you've always been able, after the first update to macOS, after the Pro Display XDR came out, you could set custom presets of the color balance basically, and then they even had a customization option where you could make your own presets. And now they've got fine-tune calibration, which is like that, but taken to another level with really complicated numbers that I don't understand.
Yeah. The calibration fine-tuning for Pro Display XDR, that'd be a cool feature for HomePod. Calibration fine-tuning for HomePod Pro XDR.
They didn't make a big deal about the HomePod when it first came out, though. You don't need to do any fine-tuning calibration for it.
Right,
automatically sense the room.
Yeah, in the release notes, what they say is controls to fine-tune the built-in calibration of your Pro Display XDR by adjusting the white point and luminance for a precise match to your own display calibration target. So you could fine-tune the built-in calibration of your HomePod.
If you've paid $6,000 for the display, you know what that means. We are sponsored this week by Pillow. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. And one of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. Compare your sleep quality against your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and so many other health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. And you can enable recording, and Pillow will save the sounds that you're making during sleep. From sleep talking to sleep apnea, snoring, just random unexpected noises during the night. You can use recording to find out what's going on, and a lot of users have been surprised by the results. And of course, Pillow is very privacy-minded. All of your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on your device, and your iCloud storage is using end-to-end encryption. Pillow doesn't have user accounts, so you can use it anonymously, and it doesn't collect or send your personal data anywhere else. Naps boost your focus, creativity, and overall well-being. If you're working from home, you can also take naps using Pillow's power nap modes. And using watchOS 6, Pillow is taking advantage of the new extended runtime API to minimize battery consumption on the watch, so you can get an alarm on iPhone, Apple Watch, or iPad, and know that it's doing it in the most battery-efficient way possible. Pillow is available on the App Store now for the iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Discover all of Pillow's features at nabox.com/pillow. That's spelled NEYBOX sleepwell.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. And also this week, Felipe, our colleague, found evidence of from the betas and the builds and the private builds that we've been privy to, there's evidence of Mac messages going Catalyst, right? So this has obviously been talked about for a while, and we've talked about, like, what are the apps that could actually benefit from going to Catalyst? Mm-hmm. And messages is very high on that list because it lacks so much stuff. It's like messages and maps are like key options where you can just look at the iOS version and they're just way further ahead, right?
Yeah.
And to date, Apple hasn't converted any of its existing apps to Catalyst, right? They've only introduced new apps.
Right. Right, and so we've had plenty of hours of discussion on which apps would benefit from actually, like, you replace the current Mac version with a Mac Catalyst version. You know, just one feature alone in Messages that is so good would be the new search that they've got built into iOS 13 and iPadOS 13. It's so good. Like, you don't really care until you need it, but if there's just one thing that you want to find and you keep your messages and you just, like, you know, do a search for it, it can be amazing how fast you can find something that way, compared to in the Mac. Like, it's just game over unless you use an app.
The Mac, you're like actively trying to avoid the search field because
accidentally
brush your fingers and then type one character and then the spinner comes up and your, like, messages at phrases for about a minute before it actually does.
And they fix search on the Mac, you know, but, like, they didn't fix it. It used to be like a hazard, you know, it's like a biohazard for your computer. now it's just
useless because it's still only at most you're going to get one result, whereas on iOS it shows you every instance of the word that you've searched for. So
yeah.
Mac messages going to Catalyst. Obviously, I'm not a big fan of Catalyst, but we've spoke before that if you are going to transform an app into Catalyst, messages would be a great one to get loads of benefits very, very quickly. And in iOS 13, they obviously had to update messages to support multiple windows, so that could come across by itself automatically. Mm-hmm. Like,
sure.
There isn't, and messages is a relatively simple application when you get down to the brass tacks, right? Like, you've got the chat window, then you've got the sidebar. So it's like perfect for a Catalyst version where you.
Messages is a platform too. There's a whole economy of message apps, of iMessage apps.
Oh, in the iMessage app store, yeah.
Yeah, so if you just.
Right now, that can't be, like, even if Apple wanted to, they couldn't do that on the Mac because all the iMessage apps are UIKit, right? Mm-hmm. So going to Catalyst could open up for them to offering, you know, support for the iMessage App Store on the Mac. But I think we can all kind of agree that the iMessage App Store has not been a big success. So maybe they just won't bother with that part of it. If they, you know, I could see them, like, dropping the iMessage App Store in many ways, actually.
I think it's on par. It wasn't, maybe it doesn't, like, go as quickly, but I think, you know, something as basic as, like, you know, Giphy that Facebook just bought, is better than the built-in images app. There's a bunch of examples of those, like, single utility apps that are not, like, you don't change them often, but, like, you wouldn't want to lose. And it's kind of on, you know, speaking of Facebook, it's kind of their answer to what Facebook Messenger had. And so to remove it would be a backstep, I think. And so I'm excited about this just on a whole other level of, like, Apple ports one app to the Mac. It's also a platform, really. So then that would just, ports the whole thing over.
I think that's a fair point. Like, there are, when they were first demoing the iMessage App Store, they were expecting, like, all these restaurant apps to start doing, like, communal bills and, like, add all your food to this one shared thing in Messages, and then we'll all go and check out and you know, in one go together, right? And that side of the equation didn't really happen. Kind of like the TVOS App Store shopping for houses on your TV. Like, that's kind of like the direct corollary there. But the iMessage App Store does get used for stuff like the gift search. Sticker packs, right, are relatively popular, I think. Mm-hmm. And the there's a game app called
The One of the Bird. Yeah.
Game, something like that. And that is incredibly popular. Like, there was a time when that disappeared from the App Store for, like, 2 hours or whatever, because there was some, you know, the account expired or whatever and it had to renew. And
right.
People on Twitter were flipping out about them. Apple's killed all the iMessage games. Like, iMessage games, people... The Game Pigeon iMessage App Store app is so popular that now people just think it's built in, and, like, normal people will just say, play the iMessage games, and what they mean is the Game Pigeon app. Yeah.
I'm looking at my iPhone with a Messages app, and you know, there's so many things that this would tackle. right now, if you, there's a few things here. Right now, if you want to send a message on the Mac app, you have to use the keyboard unless you're using an accessibility feature. There's no on-screen click to send that I'm aware of.
Yeah, you have to press enter, right?
Yeah, you have to press return. So that's a thing. There would be that arrow, you know, there'd be the send thing. And like you could maybe long press it and record audio or, you know, that kind of thing. So that's a very small thing, but that would be fixed by this. The photo picker. You've got the photo picker in the Messages app on iOS and iPadOS. You've never had it in the Mac app, but it would be cool. And it's also in other places. And like the Twitter app does a good job of like picking from the Photos app on the Mac, on their Catalyst app on the Mac. So that would be a good improvement. Apple Pay. I mean, why wouldn't Apple Pay work there? Because, you know, the only reason it can't right now is because it's made for mobile.
Yeah, I forget about Apple Pay because I can't do it.
But you can make Apple Pay purchases on the web with Safari. So
Apple
if you
Pay
can
cash,
do
why that it makes sense for them to offer it on the Mac through Messages, yeah.
Yeah. The music
I wish
app
that to the UK. I wish they'd that to another country, but they haven't.
The music app on for Messages I think is neat. I wish they do the same thing for podcasts, where if you use Apple Podcasts, what the music app does is just like you open it and it's got your now playing song, which you can tap and share over iMessage, or it's got like your recently played songs. That, but for podcast episodes, especially with timestamps, would be really cool. Yeah.
TV. They should have a TV one, like stuff you've watched recently.
Digital Touch? Yeah, yeah.
I think they could probably get rid of that one.
I liked when Digital Touch was only on the Apple Watch.
It was pretty cool at that point, but
yeah,
I've never used it as an iMessage app.
I draw on it a lot, especially on the iPad. If I'm like just messaging family or something, I'll pull out the pencil and I'll do like a really elaborate sketch on the iPad.
Would
with
you
Digital
miss
Touch.
It if they got rid of it?
No.
Okay. Anyway. So that one yeah. can go. That one's a flop. But yeah, like GIFs, stickers, an emoji. Even they could do an emoji stickers on the Mac. Like,
yeah,
they're pretty popular.
I have a Golden Girls sticker pack. I've got a little kitten sticker pack. These are great. I used to make sticker packs and, you know, made some money off that. And I was forced
and
to.
And obviously, as long as all the iMessage apps are stuff, you've got the additional bubble effects.
Yeah. The good version of like hiding.
Yeah, the good
text.
Version of Visible Ink is the, instead of the Windows 98 version you get on the Mac at the moment, like all of that good stuff.
That could, you could use metal. Is that a thing?
Yes, I guess.
Yeah, if you open the App Store on Messages right now, I can't believe we're talking about this for this long. But Game Pigeon is like the first thing that you see that they feature.
I told you it's the most popular thing by a mile.
Yeah, and then there's all like the paid Disney stickers, but it's pretty much like Game Pigeon. I was looking to see if there's like a version of, I guess I don't really do charts. Well, there's top paid. Yeah, there's top free and top paid. So Game Pigeon's number one, GIF Keyboard is number two, and then Giphy is number three. And you just keep going on the list. There's something, I don't know what PixArt photo and video editor is. I guess you just edit your pictures there. Swapper, reverse text bubble, ball pull, pulse for iMessage. It kind of makes sense. Like the market figures it out. Bitmoji, they've got the cool Bitmoji stickers there. Those are neat.
It sounds like a lot of like kid focused stuff happens in the iMessage App Store.
I wouldn't say kid focus. I would say like hip, fun stuff. Okay. Fun stuff happens.
But yeah, Game Pigeon is so popular. In the UK store, it's got 1,300 ratings. Like, it's so popular. And they even added 3 weeks ago. They added a new game to the collection. So clearly, the developers invested.
There's
enough usage to keep developing.
I've used the Starbucks app, I think, to send a gift card from over iMessage. If I go to the paid section, the top app right now is it's a sticker pack. It's $1. It's called Pizza Rats. So just imagine that. The next one is called 420 Emojis, and the icon's weed. And then Black Key or Black Eyes. You know, I think maybe we might have Yes No Reverse stickers. So. And people have some fun with this stuff. So.
Yeah, like bring it. Okay, it's not dead, but.
And you can view stickers on the Mac. They're not aligned properly, you know.
But you can't get the nice layout.
You can't initiate them.
Drop them exactly where you want to. Yeah
you can't initiate
messages
them.
Messages on the Mac, bring it and do
that's
it
the real story this week is messages on the Mac is going to have iMessage apps. And, like, that's the story this week.
That is the story.
Yeah. How am I doing on that type?
What do you think about Catalina, by the way? Because at the moment, it feels like everyone's talking about, like, Catalina's not being very good. While, like, iOS 13 has got into a decent spot, but Catalina, lots of people are still upset about it. I personally don't think it's terrible. Like, I think it's fine. I'd put it at, like, completely fine. I do have, like, niggles with it, but I don't, I think I had niggles with Mojave as well and previous versions. Like,
With every version, there's one new feature that, like, wasn't there. I'm not used to, and it changes, like, some defaults, and I change it back and I'm happy. You know?
One weird thing I am seeing is, so I have a Synology connected over the network, obviously, and that has shared folders, right? So if I go into Finder, click Synology on the left in the little sidebar, and then click on one of the shared folders, it will never join. It will say, cannot connect, this item is missing, right? But if I go to the Finder's menu bar, click the Go button, then click Connect to Server, and then click Synology, and then click the same folder from that different, just the different menu, it connects every single time.
That's a you issue. I don't have that issue.
Oh yeah.
We're the same.
Nothing. It never. Okay, that never happened on my.
We're the same stuff. Wow.
Catalina problemo.
Okay.
Wow. It's a Catalina problem. At least in my experience, that started happening around September time when I upgraded.
I don't have any issues with my Synology, and I use it daily.
So I use my with
Finder.
And my Finder is not as happy.
The only time I have a problem is when I'm not at home, because then it's not on the network.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think Catalina is terrible, right? Like.
Obviously. I think it's awesome. I think if I think about it, there's nothing that prevents me from doing my work. I'm doing more work than ever. And there are a lot of times there's like an OS release and it's hard to remember like what are the new features this year. If I just think about Sidecar, like I use Sidecar and it's, I don't think like I'm going to use Sidecar for the sake of it now. I think I'm used to being at home with multiple monitors. Now I'm mobile on the road and, you know, it would be nice to have another display, and I throw it up, and then there it is. So I use that feature a lot.
We've been using iCloud Share Folders.
Mm-hmm, yep. We've been using that
successfully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No issues there. I hear so many people talk about, you know, trust issues with iCloud and iCloud Drive, and you know, to each their own. But that's where I spend my money, and that's what I use. And
have you ever lost data putting something in iCloud?
Well, if we go back to like iCloud, is like iCloud is now available as a thing. I'm sure I have, but I can't think of any time. But in the last like 3 years professionally, yeah, I haven't lost anything. Yeah, no.
Yeah, same. No. I've trusted a lot of stuff to iCloud, and it's never done me wrong.
And it only takes like one time to burn you. If one thing a part of iCloud burns you, then you're not gonna trust like any of the system. So if you get burned by like photos on the Mac, you know, in iCloud Photos, then you're not gonna want to touch iCloud Drive, you know, and all this stuff. But for me, I haven't. I don't even think about it. I just use it, you know. And yeah, I do things like
my family's never complained about like iCloud problems. Like,
yeah, if I just gets
excessively bad reputation from technology.
Yeah,
from technology analysts.
They should rename it to Mobile Me, and then they'd be like, "Oh, it's a whole new thing." they're back. No. Like functionally, like you know, if I record a podcast with somebody. Or do some collaborative project with somebody and they want files from my machine. You know, I pay for $10 a month for iCloud for 2 terabytes. And, you know, I've got space on the Mac and I use the whole thing where you can offload, you know, storage to iCloud. And so I see that on my desktop where there's like things that are there. And they've got the little cloud next to them, next to the folder. And it's just like some files in there are offloaded. I access those files from like iPad, from the iPad and the Files app. And it's like my desktop's there again in terms of file structure. But just this past week, I've sent a podcast file to somebody I put it in my iCloud Drive on Finder after I'm finished recording. I right click it, share, add people,
share the link,
make it where anyone with the link can see it. And then I copy it to a clipboard and then I paste it in an email or something. And you could also do the thing where you do was it mail drop or no? I don't know, but it's something
called mail drop. Yeah,
mail drop.
That's what his name is. Yeah.
All right, mail drop. So mail drop, where you email over iCloud, and it can use your iCloud storage, or even you can even like if you're using the mail app on the Mac, for example. Like I can use my 9to5 Mac email, which is based on Gmail, and I can select to have mail drop be an option, and then have that 2 terabytes of iCloud that I've got. You know, take advantage of that. So that's not
the public iCloud. Link thing is great and it never fails. I just wish they'd make it easier for you to actually make the public link because you have to right click.
Yeah, it is so many steps. Yeah.
Then you have to add people, but then you're not actually adding people. You have to click the little options button.
Yeah, it should be.
Should be like right-click, copy public link, I think.
Yes, yeah, which I'm sure Dropbox is like that.
Dropbox exactly works like that. I'd say my primary frustration with iCloud is not like concerns about data loss or it not working. It's that I just want to do even more stuff with iCloud because I'm paying for 2 terabytes and I'm only using like 300 gig, right? Like,
yeah.
I want to be able to do proper family photo albums, properly shared across iCloud, not just like the intermittent stuff. I want like proper automatic, you know, shared albums that actually work properly. I want like iCloud Time Machine so I can do like a perfect disk image of my computer. Like, let me put stuff in that 2 terabytes that's actually worthwhile, right? Like, you can't even today, you can't do iCloud folders that aren't in like documents or desktop, right? They always start in there. Or you make shared folders individually. But I want like my whole home folder to be backed up to iCloud. Like, let me actually use the storage space that I'm paying for. Like, that's what I want them to do with it. I'm perfectly happy with how it works.
Yeah, iCloud opportunities are that the base storage needs to be much higher than 5 gigabytes. Correct. And at the top end, there needs to be a bigger than 2 terabytes plan, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like 2 terabytes is $10, 5 terabytes is $20, you know, something. Or they said actually, I mean, maybe there has to be a limit at some point to like prevent abuse, but 2 terabytes is not what it needs to be at max. There needs to be more than that. Also, last thing I'll say on this, I'm not sure how we got to iCloud, but we'll say to Catalina, of course. But just this past week, I was working on a project with somebody who isn't really that I know of. I don't think that they are tech savvy. Pretty sure they're not actually. And so it's a creative project. And so I took videos, like 2 gigabytes of like video files. And I put them with different titles in a folder, compressed the folder, put the zip folder in iCloud Drive, did the share link thing, and then I sent them that link over email. Now, I haven't like heard back on how that goes yet, but you know, ask me again next week and I'll tell you like if it worked out or if I had to like, you know, do it a different way. But I think that's going to be okay.
When you click on the link, it basically just takes you to a web page and says, do you want to download this? And you press download.
Right.
Like it's quite obvious, intuitive, really, from the other.
Yeah. Places. And they are in the Apple ecosystem, but I'm not relying on that. I think they might actually, I think they could be using Windows, but because I know that you don't have to have an Apple device to be on the receiving end to make it work.
Yeah, just downloads.
I know it's possible. So, you know, we'll see what happens next week. But that's like the biggest test so far for me, besides like what we do.
Especially in the current times of the lockdown, you should be avoiding going out for grocery shopping wherever possible. Sunbasket is a perfect and delicious solution to do just that. Sunbasket delivers healthy, delicious meals straight to your door. It offers recipes for all kinds of dietary preferences, like paleo, Mediterranean, vegetarian, gluten-free, and so much more. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook. Everything you need is delivered to your door. All ingredients are appropriately portioned and they're ready to prep and ready to cook. You can enjoy a dinner full of organic produce in as little as 15 minutes. Recipes include hoisin steak strip, lettuce cups with pickled daikon and carrots, roasted salmon with miso glazed eggplant, and black bean tostadas diablo with cabbage slaw and guacamole. Recipes are easy and simple to follow, so anyone can use Sunbasket, no matter your experience level or how much you've been in the kitchen before. And now, Zach, you had a meal basket, right?
Yeah, Sunbasket's awesome. I told the story before about how when the box arrived, my kids were like sitting on the box, as using it as like a little chair, and that turned into food. And you know, the best thing to say is like, you know, because it's so hard to describe like how good a meal is and eating it. And I'm the kind of person that if I go out into a restaurant, I can look at like a text menu, but I really want the picture menu. So best thing I can say is go to sunbasket.com and just like look at these pictures of the food. And you've got good tips for like what's a speedy meal, what's pre-prepped, what you can put in the oven, which is like my trick. And you know, you'll get a really good idea, especially if you're hungry, of how good this stuff looks and is.
Nice. Now, of course, everyone's worried about cleanliness in the current environment. Sunbasket facilities have the highest levels of food and employee safety. In the wake of COVID-19, Sunbasket is reinforcing strict adherence to its operating procedures and increasing how regularly it sanitizes offices and distribution centers. So right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout. That's all one word, happyhour. That's sunbasket.com/happyhour, sunbasket.com, and enter promo code happy hour at checkout for $35 off your order. Sunbasket.com/happy hour, promo code happy hour.
All right, Mayo, next up is some Apple Watch band news. Maybe, possibly, we'll see. This is an interesting one. A few weeks ago, a reader in Vietnam tipped us photos of what appears to be a new style of leather loop band for the Apple Watch. And that's the, it's like leather covered. There's no buckle. It's magnetic like the Milanese loop is. And then like inside the leather is like multiple magnets. And that's kind of what gives it like the integrity of the band. And it's kind of like rigid and, you know, it's the leather loop from day one. It's never changed.
Yeah,
it's never changed. And this looks like this looks like it would be the new leather loop if this is correct. And all we have from the pictures is this is like a different style. It's more like the segments are more like pill shaped, kind of contained within the band as like individual pill shaped magnets. And it doesn't, it's just a different kind of design. Very, very subtle change, but it's also very bold in that like you look at it and it's got more of an opinion, I think, than the other band did.
Do you think it looks waterproof?
That's the big question. I mean, you can't, I don't think you can take that away from the pictures. The thing is, Nomad has made a leather band that is made from some kind of material. Like, it's not as good as like just like a straight leather band, but it's different enough that like you would know it's different, but it has the look of leather and water resistance like Apple's other bands. So I think it's definitely like a step further to assume that this would be water resistant or waterproof. But it would be cool.
Just because I look at it and I don't think it's ugly, but I don't think it's as elegant as the original.
No, yeah. And it kind of just has the style of like if you looked at the sport loop, which is the Velcro version, you know, they take that, it takes that shape. And where it's got like the full width and everything all the way through. Mm-hmm. I guess also the difference is that it probably does. I mean, maybe this is obvious and I only just picked it up, but that it doesn't do the whole loop through thing because the leather loop has like a short half and then a very long half, or, you know, short part and a very long part. And this would be in the style of like a leather loop or no, excuse me, a sport loop. Well, Milanese or a sport loop where it's like there's no pull through about it, because even Milanese has like a little bit of like, you know, you can pull it through the you can pull it through the connector, so it's closer to what sport loop is, where instead of being Velcro it'd be magnetic. But it has that like one shape to it instead of like, you know, it's just pretty wide of a shape.
It doesn't have to have an opening for the other bit to loop through, basically.
That's right. So it's, you know, and we got these pictures and I contacted the reader. I went through the reader to the reader found them on Facebook where a local vendor was selling or had posted on Facebook that they had received these and would be selling them and that they were like pre-release bands, which is like kind of iffy, right? There's no track record. They say they have a track record of doing this, but none that we've seen, none that's been documented. I contacted the owner of the shop and we chatted for a little while. They offered to mail one out like to review. I mean, it's all just like, to me, what I was looking for was some piece of evidence that says like
that actually linked it to Apple.
Yeah, these are model numbers. These are marketing materials, and I haven't got that yet. Yeah, but
the problem with Apple Watch bands is there's so many knockoffs and random stuff.
I mean, it's made for that. Like, it's made to have bands in any look, and Apple only serves like a portion of that. And this could, I mean, you know, this is 50-50 as to whether this is Apple or not.
Exactly. And so. The marketplace exists, but that also makes it hard for us to verify, like, someone just having random pictures of new bands and saying they're, like, where's the smoking gun?
And you can even buy, like, Apple official bands, like the Milanese loop, that aren't Apple's Milanese loop, and they look the same or they're different colors, you know, And so it's just, you cannot tell from these pictures. And so we didn't run the story yet. My discussion with the owner faded. Didn't go anywhere. And then one morning, these pictures, or a different set of pictures of these same bands, were on Reddit. you know, so it's out there. So we cover it as a rumor. You know, we don't know one way or the other, but this is at least a rumor. Like, they're claiming that this is a pre-release band. And I'm not sure at the time if, because I've been traveling and kind of, you know, not looking at this very closely, but if they claim to be from the same source. But then today on Messenger, the shop owner sent me the pictures that were from Reddit, and I claiming that they're his or theirs. So
yeah,
it's, you know, it's
like the same place, but
yeah,
the Reddit thread didn't have any evidence that they're directly linked to Apple either. So
right. And the shop owner told me that he didn't have these in hand yet, that they were from his supplier. You know, it's just all like super iffy. And so I couldn't credibly say, like, look at these, and then they'd be debunked and I feel stupid. So we covered it as a rumor once, like, everyone else, you know, it went from like, we had these pictures to like, these pictures are on the internet now. It's still a toss up. The thing I'm like kind of curious about, and I don't want to talk about this too much because we don't know if these are real or not, but in some of the leather ones, it's like a tan leather color or subtle brown leather color, but then the border of it is a different color, like white. Mm-hmm. And in the ones that we received, like, they were just a bunch of variations that were kind of like, why would you have that many tones on the side and have the same? But it's, you know, anything's possible with Apple Watch bands. It's just that these things have now went from like, we had these a few weeks ago to like, now they're out in the open. Yeah. And so we have to take them seriously to some degree.
I think if they are water resistant, then the design makes sense. Otherwise, sure. I don't know why Apple would change, like, replace them for the existing leather.
Yeah.
I just think that one looks prettier.
And in terms of what your opinion is on the appearance, it just changes from person to person. I mean, we've got people on our team that want to buy these the moment they come out, or if they're not real, like, find them and buy them. To me, the only way I would use one if it were water resistant, because I do have a leather loop band that I bought for like half the price from Best Buy, brand new, and it was like, you know, getting rid of those. And I'll wear it sometimes, but it's like not very often, because I want my watch to be able to get wet. And that's also, I wanted to mention that as a point too, you know, not to read too far into this, but Apple been like, as they've learned from the Series 2 and beyond that people want to use their watch in ways that involves getting wet, then they've really pushed the bands that can do that. I mean, and you can get the Milanese Loop wet and the Link bracelet that they've really downplayed wet, but they're officially, like, they say, don't, you know,
corrosion, obviously, because it's metal.
Correct. And
they
definitely don't like promote the leather bands as much. They make new colors, you know, sometimes, but that's it. So this would be the first, this would be the first new style since we've had the first round of bands. And then we had woven nylon, which came and went. And then we had sport loop. That's it, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's it. Yeah. So this would be the first, like, the third new style. So we'll see if it's
everyone. Do a little shake up, to be honest.
Yeah, the only thing is, like, I saw some people just kind of doing guesswork on Twitter too, and it was like, you know, maybe these were prototypes that they didn't end up shipping, and like, the whole timing is like, why would these appear now on their own? I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, here it is.
If it happens, it happens.
Yeah, we do know something else that's out today in new colors, and that's Beats Power Beats Pro, and these. Not so similarly in terms of like the source, but they leaked before they were announced. They were officially announced today on Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And, there's no change to like what Power Beats are. It's just different colors. Four new colors joining the original black, which was the only color for a while. And then you had three different colors, you know, versions of navy, green, and kind of a tan color. The new colors are as leaked. They're called Spring Yellow, Cloud Pink, Lava Red, and Glacier Blue. And they're like, you know, the spring is a pretty good summary of like what these colors are like, because they're just like what leaked. The names leaked and the pictures leaked. So we've all seen these before if you've paid attention to the rumor.
And so this is the conclusion to the long-running rumors about a Power Beats refresh, right? Because
well, maybe. I mean, these are just the color change. That's right, yeah.
Seems like that's what all the leaks have been about, though, right? Like, even when we see new model numbers and stuff, it doesn't seem like it's going to be like, you know, new generation Power Beats this year. This is just kind of
strictly a change in color. As you record this, I haven't got any, but I'm supposed to have all four colors, and then you can ask me, did anything else change? And I'll let you know either way. But you know, because we discussed kind of what all the opportunities are for Power Beats Pro a few weeks ago, and those will still exist. But then all the strings will too. Like, you know, 9 hours of battery life is great, or 24 if you've got the case. Yeah, I like Power Beats still. So new colors, and That's what beets are known for, you know.
They're definitely good at churning out colors.
It's pretty, yeah. So there's that. And then from Power Beats, there's some new Siri stuff that I've not paid close attention to. So tell me, what is the story with Siri this week, and I'll tell you what I think about it.
So Bloomberg had a nice story about a new acquisition that Apple's made. It's a small company called Inductive Inc., and they used artificial intelligence to automate the task of identifying and correcting errors in data. So the idea is that this could help. This could be part of the Siri stack that can find issues in the data set and correct them. So obviously everyone has, you know, Siri could probably do with some data correction along the way, right? And what was more interesting to me than like the top line acquisition is Bloomberg said that John Driandrea, who obviously joined Apple in 2018 and is now president of machine learning and artificial intelligence at Apple, we are still kind of waiting for him to really show like an impact on terms of like an end product, if you know what I mean, because everyone seems to assume that he's working on some generation of future Siri type stuff, but so far since coming, can't really point at something and go, this is meaningfully better now.
That report, right, that he was going to be a long-term fix it guy and not a, you know, let's look at a bunch of different problems and solve those, that's so panned out. Because we've not had a bunch of like small problems solved, really. They've been like minor things, but it's all, it's, you know, like you just said, it's going to be the big picture stuff, presumably.
The Bloomberg report says that Driandrea has acquired about a dozen, so about 12 different AI startups that are apparently all contributing to some future incarnation of like how Siri works and improving the base levels and fundamentals. But the report doesn't go on to actually say like, and it's going to be, we're going to see changes here. Do you know what I mean? Cause I feel like that's what kind of everyone's waiting for. They're waiting for like Apple to stand on the stage. Maybe Driandrea himself presents it and goes like, here is Siri 2. Do you know what I mean? Like some massive separation.
It would be Siri 10 and it would be the letter X, but take your point.
Do you know what I mean? That's kind of what we're waiting for. Like we've seen minor improvements, but nothing like so significant. You could say that Driandrea, who previously worked on like Google Voice and Google Assistant and Gmail and all sorts of other AI tasks at Google, made such a big difference. We're expecting him to do something in that range at Apple, and they wouldn't have made him a senior vice president in like the space of 3 months for no reason. Do you know what I mean? Right. So like he's clearly got some big mission objective, but we're still kind of waiting for that to come to fruition. So maybe we'll see him on. And I think when he has actually like got something meaningful to show, they'll put him on stage probably and have him like preview it or like talk about it. Do you know what I mean? Because it's kind of like product facing.
But what if he just what if he just retires and like we never see anything?
Well, then we're out of the massive failure.
No, I think of these acquisitions as like, you know, there's always like some component of like the product, you know, or patents or something. But in this case, it just seems like it's a hiring spree. Really, it's like, you know, we're building up a Siri team. These are experts in these fields. You know, build out your roster.
Sure. Yeah. And if you buy 12 little companies, that's a lot more smart people working on the same thing, right? Do you know what I mean? So fingers crossed we'll see something like materialize, because and improving Siri obviously benefits all of Apple's platforms, but it also benefits like the HomePod situation, right? Because one of the big things against the HomePod is that the virtual assistant side of the equation is not as good as the Google Assistant or the Echo. And that is debatable. And we've talked about this before, right? How people like to say that Siri's like terrible and doesn't work at all. But there are some places where it does work. But there's also areas where you can definitely, like, especially just on like general trivia, like the Echo and the Google Assistant work much better. So, like, hopefully we'll see, you know, maybe we'll see what comes in iOS 14, right? Because there was also this other report, this other like Twitter video that got spread around this week of a dictation example where, again, you know, dictation's powered by AI and artificial intelligence, and they were just doing a side by side of the Google Pixel AI and the Apple AI, and the Google Pixel AI was much, much faster and much more responsive at actually doing transcription. I will say that I was going into watching this video, I was like, okay, the iPhone's actually going to have it like wipe the floor with it. Do you know what I mean? I was expecting it not to be even close. It was actually closer than what I thought it was going to be. Like it could have been a lot worse. I'll put it that way. Like the experience was definitely better on the Google side, but it wasn't 10 miles apart. Like it wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to. So I was like, well, actually that could have gone a lot worse for sure. Apple, if you know what I mean. Cause I was expecting them to be not, you know, the best, but I was like, oh, I bet Google's way ahead. And then they showed it. I was like, okay, it's not too bad. But on the flip side, Neela Patel this week also had a very viral tweet go viral where he basically asked his watch, tell me the weather in London. And obviously he's living in America, and the watch came back with the weather of London, Ontario, or London in Canada, right? So whatever city, there's a city of London in Canada. And obviously what Neil meant was London, UK, right? And so there was this big thing this week where everyone was like asking their watch, what's the weather in London? And I'd say 80% of people got the US one, got the London, Canada one. And then like 20% of people got the UK one, which is what most people expect to mean when you're asking for London weather. And then there were some cases where they would ask their phone and they get one city, but then they'd ask their HomePod and they get the other city. So it's kind of like inconsistencies like that and just kind of basic intelligence like that where we're looking for Siri to improve, right? Because even if you can argue that the London, Canada one is the one you actually wanted, what you really want in that experience is like a disambiguation option. So if it comes up and says, this is the weather in London, Canada, but you really meant London, UK, you should be able to go to your assistant, no, I meant Britain. Do you know what I mean? And then it would redirect it. And then the next time, if it was being really clever, it'd remember what you told it, so then you wouldn't have the problem again. But Siri's not complicated enough to do that.
Let's do something. If I were to ask you the weather in Birmingham, where would you think that is?
I would think of the UK city.
Okay, let's both ask our watches using the button, not the voice activation, and see. What's the weather in Birmingham?
Looks like nice weather coming up in Birmingham today. Up to 17 degrees.
So that's the UK city.
Okay, I got Alabama, which is what I was looking for. I had this on.
That did actually work.
There we go.
Yeah, and again, it's not saying it's not contextually aware in every case. It's just fiddling. It's just cleaning up the edges where it is kind of broken, right?
This is probably a pretty big story for London and Canada. Why are we getting all this attention? Like the weatherman and the weather person in London, Canada's got to be like, what's happening? We're trending.
Cool. So yeah, that's the status theory, right? No, we're just kind of waiting for it to get better. And every month or so, Apple acquires a new company that seems like it will get better, but we're just kind of sit on the sidelines, actually observing and hoping that at some point they're going to say, and now you can use Siri and be very, very confident in it for all of these range of problems.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Apple TV stuff. We'd say like Apple TV.
A lot of TV stuff happened this week. Yeah.
Apple TV plus some more stuff. Let's do that. thank you for understanding that. First off, Apple TV channels. How's that?
Yeah. So this week there was obviously the launch of HBO Max, which is HBO's new streaming service. Somewhat confusing name, but essentially it's HBO Now plus some more stuff, right?
Yeah. So I want to run through this. I haven't like studied for this quiz, but HBO Go, if you have cable, that's your login. Right. HBO Now, standalone streaming service without cable, correct, just like Netflix. HBO Max, the future of both of those things.
Yes. And so depending on what cable provider you've got, you might get HBO Max for free because HBO had to do deals with the cable companies. So if you pay for HBO through your cable company, you might get Max for free. If you're using HBO Now before, Now literally just becomes the Max app. They just rebranded it essentially. And if you have one of the AT&T wireless plans, you also get HBO Max for free. But it's not essentially, HBO Max is HBO Now, plus some new originals and then some other content they've got from elsewhere.
Also, another way of knowing this is that HBO Go is like the old one with like the gray lettering. Max is the one that's like, really trendy, like at the time when it was introduced, like ultra fine font for Max.
That's now.
There you go. I tried to be correct and I couldn't. And then Max, which is current, not now, but current, is purple because that's trendy. With white text, and it's kind of bold.
Yeah, and so the streaming service launched this week. It's fine. It's doing okay, right? And most people are getting it for free, or do they just transition from HBO Now to HBO Max, right? So whatever. But the consequence on the Apple TV ecosystem is that at the same time that this has been introduced, they have stopped they've stopped offering the Apple TV channel HBO. So if you use the Apple TV channel feature for HBO, which would allow you to actually watch HBO videos inside the TV app natively without getting kicked out to a third-party application, and you could download the HBO videos inside of the TV app, all that stuff alongside the other channels in the system like Stars and Showtime and the other stuff there, You can no longer do that. Well, if you were an existing subscriber to the Apple TV channel, the channel will stay around, but it won't get any of the Max content. So essentially, it's been deprecated. And if you're a new subscriber, like you haven't subscribed to it before and you just open the TV app, the HBO channel will be gone. So you won't see that little circle. And you won't
this is a year old. Channels is a year old feature too. I mean, it's a year and a couple months old. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's notable, but it's kind of an edge case because it's just media companies making big moves in this way. I don't think we'll see a lot of this. It isn't like, it's totally different than HBO wasn't happy with the performance of Apple TV channels and like their return on participating. It's that they have a whole new thing and they don't care about channels yet. Like they're still working on getting on different platforms. You know?
Yeah. I think the thing with channels is that it's basically going to be reserved for the smaller networks that don't have the brand power to have standalone applications. If you're one of the big players, you're going to want a standalone app, right? And yes, HBO Max does integrate the TV app with like the unified app Next Queue and it worked with universal search. But when you actually get down to the brass tacks of playing something, you'll get kicked out to the third party app. And that's kind of like the core thing that Apple TV channels avoided. So it's kind of a shame that they have not decided to bring Max along for the ride there. But
I have HBO Max.
Wow, you can watch like some more stuff now.
I waited until the podcast. I just didn't get around to trying. But I logged in with my AT&T account, or, you know, built through AT&T is what it says. I am ready to. It says I'm ready to stream. I feel like I'm
stream. You can stream the music sexual assault documentary that Apple and Oprah canceled.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I will not do that immediately.
Apparently it's very harrowing, but
okay. They promote Friends a lot. There's
Friends is new.
Yeah. Well, Friends is not new, but
new to streaming. You got all 8 Harry Potter films. You got Big Bang Theory.
They took it from Netflix in the US, I think. So
they bought the rights back. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just to be clear.
Yeah, I said that wrong. Yeah, you're right.
Not that I care, but...
No. But yeah, so there's HBO Max.
It's a nice little app. I like the color.
Yeah, it's better than a TV app. That's not not a hard bar to meet, though.
Oh, there goes the Studio Ghibli stuff. My wife will be happy about that.
Yeah, all the Studio Ghibli films.
Yeah, cool. I knew that was going to be there, but she'll be happy about that, so...
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. No, HBO Max is fine, and if you're already getting HBO before... In most cases, you get it for free. And what is kind of weird is that they haven't made a deal with Amazon or Roku, so you can't get HBO Max on Amazon Fire TV or Roku boxes.
No, who cares?
Yeah. So is Apple TV? So at least right now, it's Apple TV, iOS, web, and then Sony TVs and smart TVs.
This is good for me though, because I was using HBO Go before, because that's what worked with my AT&T account, and that always felt like kind of like it's the old school way versus where HBO Now was the standalone service. So now I'm in the updated regularly app.
You're in the modern experience. The Apple TV channels advantage where you could download episodes to play offline. That wasn't possible in HBO Now, but on HBO Max, they do have a download feature. So that's kind of the substitute there.
Cool. And people will take, I feel like this, HBO Max is considered like HBO Go was on demand stuff from the premium cable channel. HBO Now was like that, but finally you don't have to have your parents' cable login. It was kind of like the framing. HBO Max, they're sort of putting this as like it's on the level of Netflix, of Amazon Prime, of Hulu.
That's definitely what they're aiming for.
Of Apple TV. they want people to come to it. Like, it just happens to have all these connections with cable and everything else. So.
Yeah, exactly. The bigger Apple TV story this week is we obviously talked last week about how Apple's going to start buying back catalog content. And it turns out they have now successfully bought something, and you can stream it already. They have bought all 96 episodes of Fraggle Rock. So the original series of Fraggle Rock, which is about 4 seasons worth, is now available on Apple TV Plus.
Did you know Fraggle Rock before this?
No.
Same. So it's just like not registering with me as something that, like, I feel like I'm still waiting for this to happen. You know,
I knew it from because obviously they did the shorts on Apple TV Plus. They did like 6 shorts during the quarantine. But when that came out on Apple TV Plus, that was the first time I'd heard of the Fraggle Rock name.
Right, me too.
Yeah.
Which I guess it's a back catalog, so it's older
it's
stuff.
It's a beloved series. Like
it's the iPhone SE. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
well. Yeah, it was apparently a big deal in the '80s for kids.
Oh.
So
there
you go.
Hmm.
The Vulture story that went along with this was more. It gave a bit more detail, or at least their opinion on what Apple's shift in strategy is. And whereas the Bloomberg strategy kind of posed it as more just like, we're going to buy all sorts of different stuff, right, and just shove it in there. The Vulture strategy is described as being much more restrained, and they're only going to buy stuff that like directly correlates with their originals. And so with Fraggle Rock, they've ordered a reboot of the series. So they're going to do a brand new season once the pandemic's over. And so to go along with that, they bought the back catalog. But it doesn't seem like they're just going to go out and buy some random stuff like willy-nilly. It's just specifically related to, like, if they're going to do reboots, they're going to get back catalog, which makes more sense to the overall, like, messaging of Apple TV Plus to date. Cause you remember last week, I was pretty confused. I was like, why have they just randomly done this? But this kind of makes more sense to me.
I mean, like, technically, they've already done that with the French show, right? Years ago, before TV Plus was out.
Yeah. So that is actually, So back in 2018, they acquired a show called Calls, C-A-L-L-S, and that show hasn't come out yet, but they're doing a reboot, an English version of that show. And when they got the rights to it in 2018, they also got the rights to the original season. But it wasn't clear if that was just like they had to because part of the licensing
wanted
it, if you see what I mean. But now in this new world where they are doing the reboot stuff, they probably will put it on the service. Just
and the first season is in French, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So they would either dub it or subtitle it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see. We're still waiting for that to come out. So we'll see what they actually do there.
Okay.
And then Vulture said that there's a series coming out soon, which is like a travel show with Ewan McGregor, which is a long way up. And apparently he's done a few of these before, like Long Way Round, Long Way Down.
He's an actor, right?
Yeah.
And he was in a Star Wars movie.
Basically, they just travel the world on like motorbikes and just drive everywhere. And so apparently, Yeah. So apparently,
is there a trailer?
They're doing a reboot of that, but Apple already has the rights to the old version. So again, this seems like a situation where they're doing a reboot, but they also have back catalog to back it up with.
I like this flow of how you tell me what's happening, and then it's literally news to me. No, seriously, is there a trailer?
No, it's not.
No, just from the report stage. Because I bought a motorcycle I haven't received it yet, but when I go back home from traveling, it will be there for me.
Long Way Down will be Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman driving on electric Harley motorcycles across America.
Oh, cool. Neat. Because we cover electric Harleys on the electric site.
Correct.
So that's cool.
And I think that finished filming in like late last year, so it'll probably come out before the end of the year sometime.
Yeah. My motorcycle is neither electric nor Harley, but... maybe I can live stream from the podcast from it next week.
So yeah, at least that gives some more justification to the, diversion into back catalog content, right? Like it's not just, they're just going to go and buy like random stuff. I think it's more restrained than that and more like focused, which makes sense.
It's like if they added the back catalog of Amazing Stories, the original run. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. So now there's this whole question that you could ponder of, which shows should Apple reboot and pardon the
ancient catalog?
I mean, Fraggle Rock doesn't feel like that. I wouldn't be my first guess, mostly because I never heard of it before. But, I could think of something. Part of what's hard about back catalog stuff is how it ages, for like cultural, like what's acceptable as we get smarter and wiser and kinder. Mm-hmm. And that's a real risk. I guess Fraggle Rock, maybe you don't have that risk, but.
Yeah, I guess it was just like kids' shows. So
like if Apple were to acquire the old James Bond movies, it's not culturally it's off-putting. Like,
well, that's like a lot of the stuff in like Disney Plus or HBO Max, like their back catalog content. They have to put like advisory banners on.
Like, even cartoons.
We don't necessarily
approve
of the attitudes that are portrayed in this film. So we'll see what happens there.
Like, yeah, Fraggle Rock.
I think this Vulture story just gives a bit more clarity to the. Because the Bloomberg story last week just kind of felt like Apple had just completely 180'd and they've gone from, we're doing originals only to now we're just going to buy all sorts of stuff. Whereas this is like, okay, we're still focused on originals only, but in some cases it will make strategic sense for us to pick up the back catalogs in certain areas and for certain franchises. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
And then Little Voice has a premiere date, which is significant.
July 10th.
Yeah. Okay, so July 10th. It's significant because this was shown at that March Apple event I attended, where it was like they had a lot of previews of what they had, and they had certain speakers. You know, the big hang up there was Spielberg was the first speaker in Amazing Stories. It was really late into arriving on the service. I can't say, but I've not watched more than the first 10 minutes of the first episode. So.
I'd say it's very mediocre. I'd say it's not worth being the first presenter on the call list.
Okay. It was because of Spielberg's name, yeah.
I know. And to be fair, Spielberg's doing other TV Plus projects, like he's doing Masters of the Air and stuff.
Yeah, a little voice was like the musical performance of that event. You've mentioned before, like, recently, that we didn't know the status of it, and now it's got its release date.
Yeah, so that's the J.J. Abrams and Sarah Bareilles series, and Bareilles is doing original music for it. And we are almost at the point where everything Apple announced the March event is out. So once once Little Voice comes around, so as of July 10th, everything Apple showed at that March 2019 event will have been released, apart from the Oprah mental health series that's going to be the collaboration with Prince Harry. So that royal series, that one is apparently done, but it's not out yet. So that's the last thing. That's the last man standing in terms of content that Apple previewed at the March event. As soon as that's out, it's just unknown territory.
Unknown territory. Season 2 is an unknown territory. Okay. And then what... I saw this in passing, the Gawker thing. So there seems to be that there will be a story about the kind of media website Gawker, which has this whole storied past, and that will be on Apple TV?
Supposedly in development, but it hasn't been ordered yet, which means they could still reject it. So basically they're writing like pilot scripts, and then they're going to pitch it properly, and then Apple will say yes or no. So it's not definitive yet, but probably going to happen.
And is that documentary or is it based on, but it's like a series?
It's dramatic. It's like dramatized. Okay. So it's going to be like dramatized based on real events, kind of.
Okay.
It's weird. All right. It is weird. I think the Gawker news kind of just impresses, it should impress on people that Apple has a lot of originals in development. Like, people think, like, I think, you know, people just kind of generally, they're just going to do like 10 or 12 or like 15. I'm pretty sure, in terms of stuff in development, they're like closing on 100 titles. So there's going to be some wacky stuff in there, like a series on Gawker. Like,
yeah, okay.
They're casting the net wide.
Yeah. This week you saw an ad for the docuseries Home, which is one of my favorites on Apple TV, where it's like stories behind these really nice homes in Time Magazine. And so that's a print ad for an Apple TV Plus series.
Yeah, because I keep hearing stuff where people are saying that Apple's like not advertising stuff very much. Like, I don't know why people are saying that, because I see Twitter ads for Apple TV Plus shows constantly.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing billboards. If you go to the Houston...
I've seen TV ads before.
Yeah, they have loads of TV ads.
Yeah, TV ads.
Ads on Hulu. Loads of the ads on Hulu are just recommended TV Plus shows, because they're just the Apple ads. You have,
they're taking ITV, it seriously.
Yeah. ITV, which is the... like the premier commercial station, TV station in Britain, because we have BBC One and BBC Two, which are like the biggest channels, but they're paid for by taxpayers through the license fee, so they don't have any ads, right? ITV is like the biggest station that's commercial. I see TV Plus ads on ITV constantly. Like, primetime ITV shows, there's like an Apple TV Plus ad just swooped in there. Like, people need to stop saying they're not trying to market this stuff, because they have ads everywhere, including in Time Magazine.
Yeah. Okay. And then Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah. So do you remember like 3 or 4 weeks ago we were talking about this, where Scorsese was working with Paramount on a film, but the budget was spiraling out of control. So Paramount were trying to find someone else to partner with to actually make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently now it's landing at Apple, and they're going to shell out $220 million to make this film, apparently.
All right.
Yeah.
I also want to add that Quibi got airplay this week.
Well, that's going to make me not watch it even more.
So I guess it's just what you see in landscape on your phone?
Yeah.
I get my Quibi news from you, but I saw the headline, so.
Yeah, that is literally it. Like, they need like an Apple actual... Quibi's having troubles.
I saw that some advertisers don't want to pay... They want to pay ahead. Is that right?
Yeah, so originally Quibi had arranged... for advertisement of like a 26-week span. So basically half of the year they were getting paid up front on advertising. But because the numbers haven't been as good as they originally projected they were going to be, they're now renegotiating the deal. So the advertisers don't want to pay all up front anymore. They want to spread it out or delay payments until they see more impressions. And they're also cutting ad budgets for the future and stuff. And Quibi's cutting a load of shows already.
Like, and Quibi seems to blame the current environment we're in, not that it's a totally weird and obscure pitch in the first place.
I think they are, maybe they're externally arrogant like that, but I think internally they're also having, because there's been like leaks of like meetings where they're saying, you know, we have to actually shake some stuff up.
So, okay.
Like, they're not like stupid, but I think they're just in a tough spot, right? The amount of subscribers that Quibi's accrued, probably not that different to the amount of subscribers that TV Plus accrued in the same period. But the difference is, Quibi is the app. TV Plus is funded by the biggest company in the world. Like, that's the problem, right? So if you're going to do something so random, it needs to be really, really compelling. And if they don't get enough subscribers, I think they said before they'd got VC funding for 2 years. So if they don't, you know, ramp up this across subscriber base, and they were doing 90-day free trials originally, and they expire in July, so that'll be the next time you'll see a Quibi headline, probably, when this is everyone's unsubscribing Quibi. But they're literally like, that's their business, right? So if they don't succeed at it, they'll go out of business.
Yeah.
And so, whereas TV Plus has enough money, it can just sit around patiently being like, okay, we haven't got enough subscribers this year. We'll just keep buying some content. Oh, whatever. We'll just spend $200 million on this one film. Or, you know, we'll buy this Tom Hanks film for $100 million. We'll buy this Christmas Carol film for $100 million. We'll, you know, give Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston $10 million an episode or whatever ridiculous fee they're getting. And, okay, now it's 5 years later and we're doing well. Like, that's, the deck is stacked, right? It's stacked towards the company with money, and Apple has money and Quibi doesn't. Like, that's just a sad reality.
Yeah, it seems to me that a video service that, you know, is they start out with this limited position of it's for the phone, really, you know, and then they relent and do AirPlay for the TV from the phone, and then they're working on Chromecast in the next few months, and eventually you'll have like a Quibi, if they survive, a Quibi Apple TV app where you can watch Quibi content on your television like normal. Like, why would you limit yourself in that artificial way? It's like a gimmick that is a constraint and not in a good way.
Yeah, and to just wrap it back around to HBO Max, Max hasn't got deals with Amazon Fire and Roku TV, huge distribution platforms, right?
Right.
But again, they're backed by a big company that can afford to wait and sit around on cable subscriptions. They don't have to, you know. Part of the reason that HBO hasn't made deals with Amazon Fire and Roku is they know that they've got some power there. Whereas if Quibi isn't even attempting to get on those boxes at the moment. Because they're stupid by design strategy. But even if they were, they would not be the one holding the power, because they, like Amazon Fire and Roku could take them through the coals, because they know that they're the ones with strength. So that's just the perils of, like, even if Quibi hadn't done this like crazy thing where they were doing like 10-minute shows only, if they'd have just done like normal streaming service, they would still be, you know, way down on the list of chances of success, just because they don't have access to the same capital that all these big players do.
Before we head off, I want to talk about one last thing, and then transitioning from TV. You showed me today where there's a sort of a teaser for All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. It's not on Apple TV Plus, the teaser, but it's kind of a director statement that about what the second season will be about and like what they're thinking about for season three. So what's that?
Yeah, so basically there was like an interview with a website called Collider with Ron Moore, who's obviously the showrunner for For All Mankind. We're just chatting about the show, and he said that they've shot 8 out of the 10 episodes of second season. So that kind of gives an update on how the pandemic affected their filming schedule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 8's probably enough where if Apple needed to, they could probably push it out this year and just say the 2's coming in the spring. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they basically said that season 2 will concentrate on like a Cold War situation with America and the USSR, and they are going soon into a writer's room for season 3 as well. So it sounds like season 3 is already confirmed.
And they referenced the teaser of, if you've seen the last bit of the first season, then you know kind of what to think about for this next season. So I am deeply excited about that. So thank you for sharing that with me. Yeah, it kind of speaks to what, you know, the TV Plus pitch is like, if you give me one show that I want to watch a whole lot, you know, to look forward to, then it's like, all right, Apple TV Plus is fine with me. And it only takes like one or two shows for you to care a whole lot. You know, every now and then, you know, so.
Exactly.
And it's also like if you come tune in, tune out, you know, with your subscription, that's also totally fine. Like it's how people do these things. Last thing I want to say is an announcement to make, which is that, this is exciting. So exciting for me. Anyone who listens to 9to5Mac Happy Hour knows that since December, when I went to a rocket launch at Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida, it was a SpaceX launch. Like I've just been obsessed with this stuff with like no other. Yeah. And, you know, and then we had astronaut Garrett Reisman on to talk about For All Mankind, which was like the coolest tie-in of this podcast. And that, you know, it's just like really neat. So I started doing my spaceexplorer.com site in February, on February 20th. And it was just because like I wanted to take this storytelling skill I've got from 9to5Mac and apply that to my interest in space stuff now. And this last week, our publisher, Seth Weintraub, was like, okay, you're ready to bring this into the 9to5 network. And, we discussed it. It's happening. I was doing this thing anyway of like a labor of love. But this changes the whole dynamic of what I can put into it time-wise. And then resource-wise, it'll be one of the 9to5 network sites, just like 9to5Mac and how Electric is for Tesla. It'll be like that, but for SpaceX and NASA news and any of the space industry companies. And so you'll see Space Explored, hopefully by next week, integrated like with 9to5Mac, where whenever you're reading the story, some of the stories will be kind of in between. And I am so excited because it's 9to5Mac is a total dream job where, you know, coming out of college, I had this huge interest in Apple and technology. And man, I mean, that was exciting times too. It was like, you know, the iPhone was only a few years old. The iPad was a couple years old, you know, and then that was even, and then most of my time has been spent like with the watch being a brand new thing and then the experience there. And so that's been awesome. And I'll still be writing with 9to5Mac and this podcast will not change at all. Maybe I'll just like ask you for the news like we did with, you know, more often. Because this week I've been, in Florida to cover the, SpaceX Demo 2, test flight mission, which is the first time in SpaceX's 18-year history that they're sending people, on their, hardware. And it's the first time for NASA that Americans have been sent to, space since 2011, since the space shuttle retired. So it's like a big thing. Unfortunately, the first launch attempt, as probably many people know, was scrubbed because of the weather. And, the next attempt's on Saturday. I'll still be in Florida. Then Sunday, I'll still be in Florida. If it doesn't go off on Sunday, I've got to go home and check back in. And then the next attempt's like next Wednesday and Thursday. So maybe if it doesn't happen this weekend, the next Thursday, you know, we'll do this again in the same location. I'll just bring them. Yeah. But anyway,
it will be cool.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone who's been, you know, visiting spaceexplorer.com. Putting up with me talking about it here. What I can say is that it's kind of like with 9to5Mac Watch Time, where like we were just having like watch conversations at the end of this podcast, and then that kind of went into its own podcast. The space stuff will be gone from Happy Hour pretty soon. It'll just be like, you know, go check out this, you know, work on, you know, this week, and that'll be it. But I finally got my place to put it that it's in the network. So I'm so excited about that. So stay tuned for more on that. A few people asked me, will there be a podcast? Of course there'll be a podcast. So,
fantastic.
Yep. All right. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. And, the most extensive review of the built-in studio quality microphones on the MacBook Pro that we've done ever. We will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.